702, the Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Live, streaming countrywide.
On the Prime Media Plus app.
DStv Channel 856.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
On the show today, the ANC takes the IEC and MK party to the electoral court in Bloemfontein. The alleged AKA hit bagman applies for bail. The Justice Department confirms extradition process for the two other accused. Judge Maumela has been admitted to hospital. His judicial conduct tribunal hearing has been postponed. And another lightning strike at the Aikenhof pump station. We'll find out what the impact is on Joburg residents. All of that over the next hour.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Midday Report on 702 and Cape Talk with me, Mandy Wiener. Good to be with you today. We are following various court cases for you. You would have heard in that news bulletin, also from me, Judge Maumela has now been admitted to hospital. He, of course, is the former Senzo Meyiwa judge. There's some issues about him, and that tribunal's now been delayed because of that. And then also various developments in the AKA case as well. We'll speak to the Justice Department about the extradition and that process taking place in Durban today. A businessman applying for bail who allegedly was the person who paid over the 800,000 rand. But we start in Bloemfontein because the ANC has taken Mkhonto we Sizwe party and the IEC to court. Now, it's important to remember there are two separate court cases here. There is this court case that's taking place at the electoral court in Bloem, and this is over the registration of the MK party. There is a separate court matter that will be heard in Durban next week, and that is about the use of the MK insignia. So the ANC is taking the MK party to court next week in Durban over the use of the name and the insignia. So today in Bloem at the electoral court, ANC is arguing that the registration should not have taken place. And that is why the IEC is one of the respondents there. So I can tell you that former President Jacob Zuma is in that court today. So in the court papers, the ANC is arguing that the MK party's registration was irregular. It was unlawful. You'll remember the MK party was registered in September last year, and the ANC subsequently failed in its bid to object to that registration. So that's why they are now in the electoral court today. A press release sent out yesterday by the MK party clarifying some confusion regarding these two separate court cases. MK has said that they will defend itself in both of those court cases. So that's happening at the moment. For the ANC is Sesi Baloyi SC and advocate Tsediso Ramogale. For MKP, so for the Mkhonto we Sizwe party is, wait for it, Dali Mpofu SC and Muzi Sikakane SC, who of course represent Jacob Zuma as well, just saying. And then for the IEC is advocate Terry Matau SC. So some big advocates arguing this matter. Let's have a listen to what happened earlier when advocate Sesi Baloyi for the ANC told the electoral court the party is not in court to dispute the existence of the MK party, its logo and markings. They're against the registration. So explaining the difference between the two court cases, and the sound is courtesy of Newsroom Africa.
We don't seek any relief. Here is the second respondent. And the second respondent is cited because of the interest that it has in the matter. But they are not the target. We're not criticizing them for what they have done. We are criticizing the DCEO, the Deputy Chief Electoral Officer. That's where our criticism lies. And the criticism is he did not exercise his powers lawfully. That is the criticism. Indeed, the consequence, if we are successful, is if we are upheld on our complaints and on our submissions to you, if we are upheld, the consequence is adverse to the second respondent. But that's all it is. They become collateral damage. The third respondent, I do apologize. Yes, indeed, the third respondent. So the third respondent, we're not fighting with the third respondent. We are questioning the exercise of statutory authority by the first and second respondents.
So that is the ANC's advocate, Sesi Baloyi SC, who was arguing earlier, just explaining the difference there. Let's listen in to what's happening right now in that court case. And again, this feed is courtesy of Newsroom Africa.
Just an equitable remedy depends on the pleaded facts. And because in the founding affidavit there was no such invitation with reference to the facts as to what should then be a just and equitable outcome, we didn't meet it for this purpose. But it is not, the submission should not be misconstrued to say, I am then saying that the court cannot, in the regulation of its own processes in terms of Section 173 of the Constitution, direct the parties to file further submissions addressing this particular aspect. If I may then give the court the citation and check. The decision of Capitec Holding Limited and another versus Coral Lagoon Investments 194 Pty Ltd and others is reported in 2021 3 All SA 647 SCA, and I read paragraph 50 of the judgment to the court. Justices and professors of the court, unless there is anything else that the court wishes me to address.
Questions?
So that's Advocate Terry Matau SC arguing for the IEC there, and that feed is courtesy of Newsroom Africa. So the IEC's main response has been that the ANC's case is that the ANC did not challenge the registration of the MK party in time. Advocate Matau is telling the court that the ANC appealed. The appeal was rejected, and he says that should have been the end of the matter. So that's the argument. We do have a reporter, Bernadette Wicks, is in court for us. We are hoping to speak to her when that court matter goes into recess. But just to explain to you what's going on in the court benches there, it's so interesting because you have people like Lumvulo Mokonyane on the one side of the court and wearing ANC regalia, yellow and green and black. On the other side, you have a former comrade who technically is still a member of the ANC, Jacob Zuma, and the MK party. So the court is divided along those two lines as this argument happens. What are your thoughts on that? And of course, we have seen the rise very much of the MK party. Send me a WhatsApp voice note, 072-702-1702, 072-567-1567. I think that Dalian Porfo SC has just stepped up to the lectern, I think you call it, and he is about to make the case for the MK party. So we'll be watching that one closely.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
In court in Durban today, businessman Mziwetemba Gwabeni is applying for bail in the murder case of AKA Kenan Forbes and Tabelo Tibbs Motswane. Now, the allegation is that Gwabeni was the bagman. He was the paymaster in this case. The state alleges that he received more than 800,000 rand as payment for the murder and that he was the one who then shared the cash with the co-accused. This bail application was supposed to happen yesterday in the Durban Madge Court, but there were issues around documents that the state wanted omitted from his affidavit. They weren't happy that some of these documents were in his affidavit. Oren Singh, EWN reporter in court for us there. Oren, good afternoon to you. Firstly, tell us what's happened in court today with this bail application.
This is the message recording options.
Well, did not expect that. I think that perhaps we were placed on hold. Maybe we went to his messaging service. We're going to try that again. We're going to try and get through to Oren because he has been in court for us. He's been following that bail application. We are also going to speak to the Justice Department about the extradition process that is underway now. We have confirmation from the Justice Department that the Justice Minister, Ronald Lamola, has signed off on an extradition request for two of the men, the brothers, who are accused of being involved in the murder of AKA. The Ndamande brothers are accused of murdering AKA and Tibbs in February last year. So we are hoping to speak to the Justice Department as well. We'll go to an ad break and then we'll come back with both of those interviews.
702, The Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
12:19 on the Midday Report with me, Mandy Wiener, on 702 and Cape Talk. We are hoping to give you an update on that bail application taking place in the Durban Magistrates Court. If you were listening a bit earlier, we did try and speak to Oren Singh, our reporter who is there. The Durban businessman, Mziwetemba Gwabeni, is applying for bail. He, of course, is the accused, the alleged paymaster, the bag man in this case. The state arguing that he received more than 800,000 rand as payment for the murder before sharing the cash with his co-accused. This bail application was supposed to happen yesterday in the Durban Magistrates Court, but it couldn't because the state wanted some documents omitted from his affidavit. Oren Singh, EWN reporter in court for us. Oren, good afternoon to you. Tell us what's happening in court at the moment.
Good afternoon, Mandy. We kicked off, or we set off from where we left it yesterday afternoon with the state contending the contents in Zubi Themba Gwabeni's affidavit. We had a short adjournment of which Mr. Gwabeni's advocate, Joseph Wilmorens, had to omit.
Unfortunately, that line is dropped. I do think we're having an issue with our phone lines at the moment that we're trying to sort out. So we'll try and get Oren back. We're also hoping to speak to Crispin Piri, if we can get our phone lines to work, of course, who is from the Justice Department, just to explain that issue around extradition. The two brothers who are currently in Eswatini, the Ndemande brothers who've been in court there, they are also now going to, we're going to try and extradite them back to South Africa. So we'll bring you the latest on that. I have been telling you also about what's been happening in court in Bloemfontein with the ANC's case against MK and the IEC as well. I did tell you that Advocate Dalia Mpofu SC is currently on his feet for the MK party, responding to the ANC's argument around the registration of the MK party. Let's listen in to Dalia Mpofu and what he is currently saying.
Not to challenge the decision of the commission by coming here. The implications of making that election are far-reaching, because it meant that the ANC accepted the dismissal of its case. We all know that's what happens. That's what the doctrine of preemption is. You get an adverse decision, you have two options. You can appeal it, or take it further, or accept it. Their own evidence is that they accepted that decision. They keep on telling, my learned friend Ms. Maloy tells you, go to paragraph 21 of the reply. We make it clear, we are not here to challenge the appeal decision. Please, these parties are confused. They think we're here to challenge that decision. No, we're not here for that. We're here to challenge the decision of the deputy CEO. This is what they say themselves. Page 205, paragraph 21 of the reply. Now, the implications of making that election go to this mystery of what is called inexplicable. It's not inexplicable. The ANC did indeed accept that outcome. They had reconciled themselves with the idea of Umkhonto we Sizwe party being registered in South Africa. Not without trying, they tried, but they reconciled themselves with that idea. So what changed? The only thing that made them to wake up from their slumber was the announcement on the 16th of December by former President Zuma that he would vote for, or he would vote and campaign for the MK party.
Advocate Dalia Mpofu SC arguing for the MK party in the electoral court in Bloemfontein.
702.
The Midday Report with Mandy Wiener.
Let's walk the talk.
Okay, we're going to try our luck and go back to Oren Singh, EWN reporter who's in Durban following the AKA case and that bail application of the businessman Mziwe Themba Gwabeni. Oren, hopefully you can hear us and let us know what happened in court today.
Loud and clear, Mandy. So basically, we had a short adjournment this morning. We picked up where we left off yesterday. The state wanting certain evidence omitted from Mr. Gwabeni's affidavit in respect of his bail application. Thereafter, his advocate, after omitting that evidence, and that evidence pertained to an affidavit that was sent over to Eswatini from the KwaZulu-Natal Director of Public Prosecutions, Elaine Harrison. And she had, in her affidavit, made reference to the two people who were arrested in Eswatini, that is Siyabonga and Malusi Ndamande. And so the state essentially wanted Mr. Gwabeni's affidavit not to include anything pertaining to the case in Eswatini. As we are aware this morning, Mandy, the Correctional Services Minister, Justice Minister Ronald Damola, has put through an extradition request to have those two Ndamande brothers brought back into the country. They'll expect it to appear in the Manzini Magistrates Court tomorrow morning. But as things stand, all five of the seven men who were arrested in South Africa have appeared, have made their applications for bail. The matter has just stood down for a few minutes for the defense and the state to agree on a date when the state can reply to the men's affidavits in respect of their bail application.
Okay, and the issue yesterday, why it didn't happen, was around documents that the state wanted omitted from his actual affidavit. Is that now sorted out?
That was sorted out today, Mandy, and those documents were in respect of evidence that was put forth by the KwaZulu-Natal Director of Prosecutions, and it pertained to the two men in Swaziland. So the magistrate essentially argued that, I don't want to hear anything pertaining to what's going on in Eswatini. It's a different country, and until those men are in South Africa, I don't want your clients making reference to anything pertaining to those two men in Eswatini. So his advocate Joe Wilmarens, had to essentially just take a short adjournment to omit those documents from his affidavit, which he did. I think a couple of interesting things coming out of the bail application of Zwitemba Gwabeni, as the state had earlier alleged, Mandy, this is the paymaster, the man who allegedly received a sum of 803,000 rand into his business bank account. He says he has a mining company and a construction company, earns between 2 to 3 million rand per annum. And he clarified and emphasized that he has nothing to do with the taxi association, despite rumors in the public domain that he's involved in taxis. He's not, but he does provide funding to people who want to get into the taxi industry. All five of the accused who've made their applications for bail intend to plead not guilty. And we're just waiting on a date for when the state will reply to their bail application.
Oren, thank you very much. Oren Singh, EWN reporter. Thankfully, we were able to speak to him there, just explaining that situation at the moment. So court just stepping down briefly there, and it's going to resume again. The Durban businessman Zwitemba Gwabeni applying for bail, and Oren speaking there also about the situation in Eswatini and the fact that we're going to have that extradition process. Well, let's speak now to Crispin Puri, who is the spokesperson for the Department of Justice. Crispin, thank you very much for your time. Confirmation from the Department of Justice that the Minister, Ronald Lamola, has now signed off on an extradition request. Can you tell us about that?
Good morning, or rather good afternoon to you and your listeners, Mandy. Yes, indeed. We can confirm that the Minister has approved the extradition request, and it's also been transmitted to the Kingdom of Eswatini. And as you understand it, there may be a court hearing tomorrow, where this would be possibly confirmed by the law enforcement agencies and the prosecuting authority of Eswatini there. We do take this quite seriously, and we're really looking forward to high levels of cooperation with the Kingdom of Eswatini on this issue.
The request was made in terms of a 1968 extradition treaty between South Africa and Eswatini. There's also that SADC protocol on extradition. What has our experience been like with Eswatini when it comes to extraditions? And are you anticipating a seamless process here?
We are anticipating a very seamless process. Thus far, we've not had any concerns with the Kingdom of Eswatini around various other mutual legal assistance matters. We've received good cooperation, and we too in turn have cooperated with their requests for mutual legal assistance where we can. So we have a good record with exchanging relevant information with the law enforcement agencies of Eswatini, and we don't see this changing in this instance.
I know that you won't be able to give us a firm timeline, but are you hoping that it will happen sooner rather than later?
Yes, the matter is before the courts now. As we speak, I think you would be aware one of the issues why the matter has been postponed to date is because the extradition request has been outstanding, but it's now there. So I think the next step is for the Eswatini courts to hear the matter, the extradition hearing, which will be presented by the law enforcement agencies of the Kingdom of Eswatini, the prosecuting authority of the Kingdom of Eswatini. And then the court will be in a position to make a decision.
Crispin Peary, thank you very much for your time and for explaining that. Crispin is the spokesperson for the Ministry of Justice, speaking to us there about that extradition agreement, or the request, at least, that has been signed off for the two brothers, the Ndumande brothers, who are accused of murdering AKA. So progress taking place there.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
12:36 in the Midday Report with me, Mandy Wiener. I want to read you a story out of the Business Day, exclusive story saying that Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula's home is being raided in that corruption inquiry. A probe into claims that Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula received and solicited at least 2.3 million rand in cash from a former military contractor is currently underway. So Business Day reporting that the Hawks, acting on behalf of the National Prosecuting Authority's Investigative Directorate, conducted an early morning raid on the home of Parliamentary Speaker Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula in Johannesburg on Tuesday. The raid following a high-level investigation into allegations that Mapisa Nqakula received and solicited at least 2.3 million rand in cash from a former military contractor during her tenure as Defence Minister. And Business Day also reporting that, according to sources, the Speaker was at home at the time of the raid in a closed-off area in Bruma. The raid was concluded shortly after 11 a.m. after the investigators seized certain items. The Speaker had been on an official visit to Paris and New York recently. Oh, that's nice. And returned to South Africa last week. So apparently the Hawks raiding Nosiviwe Mapisa Nqakula's home today in Bruma. No confirmation officially from the Hawks, from the investigating directorate, or from Parliament at this point. EWN, I'm sure, will be working on that. And we will be bringing you that story once we get confirmation.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
So the former presiding judge in the Senzo Meyiwa trial, Chifiwe Maomela, there's a judicial conduct tribunal underway into his conduct. He's been accused of gross incompetence for having too many reserved judgments. And that, of course, is why one of the reasons he is the former Senzo Meyiwa judge, not the current Senzo Meyiwa judge. So we did have the judge president yesterday giving evidence, the judge president explaining how Judge Maomela ended up presiding over the Senzo Meyiwa case in defiance of the directive that he should not hear the matter. So that was happening yesterday. I want to just give you some sense of that. Judge President Dunstan Mlambo giving evidence yesterday. Have a listen.
Perhaps I need to mention this, but, and it's a question that I've had to deal with, and probably this is a platform I can use to provide my explanation. You would know that Judge Maomela was the first trial judge in this matter, so-called Senzo Meyiwa trial. A lot of people asked me why I allocated that matter to him. There are views that have been expressed that he was struggling to run the trial properly, correctly. And I want to tell this commission, this tribunal, that as part of my view that he should not be given work that would be onerous for him, when criminal matters come to the division, they don't go to the trial roll, they go to the pre-trial roll. And when they're in the pre-trial role, they're allocated to judges randomly. And this matter was allocated to Judge Maomela to case manage until it was trial ready. DJP, who's more operational, told me that he had been informed by Judge DeForce, who's in charge of the criminal trials, that the Senzo Meyiwa trial was being case managed by Judge Maomela.
Okay, so that is Judge President Dunstan Mlambo yesterday giving evidence against Judge Tsifiwe Maumela. There have been developments in this because Judge Maumela has now been hospitalized. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter in studio to give us an update. Let's first deal with what we heard Dunstan Mlambo saying yesterday. Why was Judge Maumela presiding over this very, very high-profile trial if the JP didn't want him to?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a great question. And he answers it a little further in the clip, Mandy, where he goes into how the Maiwa trial, like many criminal matters, first start with pretrial proceedings. And it was agreed that Judge Maumela would take care of pretrial, but he wouldn't actually listen to the evidence in the actual trial. And I mean, that happens a lot. We'll see people, you know, presiding over a pretrial, and then another judge comes in and they allocated the matter. But he says that immediately after pretrial, Judge Maumela went in directly and started listening to the evidence despite having been told not to. And he says, as you say, this was in, you know, it was a rather defiant act because there was a directive from both the DJP, who is in charge of operations, as well as the JP, for him not to continue with this matter. And this was all part of the evidence and the picture that's painted by Judge President Mlambo about Maumela's conduct from about 2013 until the complaint was made.
Okay, and now you're reporting that Judge Tsifiwe Maumela has been hospitalized. What do we know about that?
Well, we know that Judge Tsifiwe Maumela was suspended in June last year, and he was suspended on these allegations for, you know, withholding or not delivering these judgments on time. And then he fell ill. So initially what happened was that even with his suspension, we were told that he'd continue presiding over the matters that were already before him, including the Maiwa trial. But then he fell ill, and then he couldn't continue with the Maiwa trial, and that's why it's taken so long from last year to now only to have the hearings before the tribunal. And so now what we're hearing is that he's been hospitalized after yesterday's sitting. From having listened to the proceedings myself, Mandy, I can tell you that the sense that I am getting from the legal team for Maumela is that he has been unwell, and that's why he hasn't been able to deliver these judgments. But when you hear an argument from a judge, from the judge president, about a matter that he heard in 2013 that was a single day civil matter that he says was not complex at all.
From when?
2013, and the judgment was only handed down almost 5 years later. This was a single day matter, so it wasn't a trial of 3, 4, 5 weeks, but a single day matter. You know, you then get a sense from the judge president that he's not really buying, you know, what we're hearing about, you know, Judge Maumela being unwell, saying he didn't bother to come tell me, saying he didn't report it to anyone. And in fact, when I would reach out to him to find out why you're not delivering these judgments, after parties in the matters would come to me as the judge president, you would say, you'd give me an excuse that your laptop doesn't work, or you would tell me that you'll deliver them the next week or the following week, and you just wouldn't do it.
Khumotso, thank you very much. Khumotso Modise, EWN reporter, with an update there on the Judge Maumela tribunal.
702, the Midday Report, Monday to Friday,
12 to 1 p.m.
So yesterday we told you about how the water system in Joburg is just getting back to normal after 2 weeks of disruptions that originated from the Akenhof pump station being struck by lightning. So everything was going fine. And then all of a sudden last night, as John Robbie would say, "Qua!" I don't think I did that very well, hey KG? "Qua!" The Akenhof pump station got struck by lightning again. Another lightning strike at a pump station. So what is the impact now? Because we understand that there was a restoration of power. What exactly is going on at the Orlando substation in Soweto? So Isaac Mangena, City Power spokesperson, joining us. Isaac, good afternoon to you. Thank you for your time. I just struck myself with lightning. I switched my microphone off. Isaac, what exactly happened at with this lightning strike last night, and what has the impact been?
Good afternoon, Mandy, and good afternoon to the listeners. Look, yesterday what happened is that there was no lightning strike at Akenhof substation. The lightning, or at least the suspected lightning that happened, is between Eldorado Park substation and the Orlando substation. Orlando is connected to Akenhof substation, and when it tripped, it basically took down that line as well. But it happened along the line. It is not really the substation itself that was basically affected by this. So, but what happened was that at around 9:15 in the evening, there was that incident, and it took out most of the substation down south. And from Fortsberg, obviously the areas around Montio, Lechurena and so forth were also affected. Lenasia, El Dorado Park were also affected. But about an hour and a half later, we managed to bring back system of which supplies water to Rand Water Board, and they were able to pump 1 hour, 30 minutes later. The rest of the residents that were out were basically restored before midnight. So around 11, I was also at the substation, and when the restoration, when the guys were busy restoring. So that is basically what happened yesterday.
Okay, important clarity there, that the lightning strike was actually at the Orlando substation, but Akenhof was impacted. As things stand at the moment, Isaac, is there any impact to the Akenhof pump station, or has the problem been rectified?
As far as power supply is concerned, we have restored electricity last night before midnight, and if we did indicate to the Rand Water Board that they can basically start pumping water, so that we do not have a situation like we had last week. So, from our side as electricity supplier, we have supplied that electricity, and as far as we are concerned, they are basically currently pumping. This morning we had a meeting with Joburg Water. The city manager was heading that meeting within the city of Johannesburg, so that if there are any gaps that have been left since last night, then we can be able to move in. And I think there was some level of comfort that we are not as in the woods yet. The reservoirs and the pumps are still basically functioning properly, and we will just monitor throughout the day to see what happens.
Okay, that's some good news, Isaac. Thank you. Is it possible for you to mitigate against the lightning strikes? If they are having this kind of impact, is there something you can do around science and technology to ensure that your lines are not affected by lightning strikes?
Yeah, so basically in terms of the standards, in terms of electricity transmissions and all the supply that we are offering, we have done everything in terms of dealing with the issues of lightning strikes at our substations. We do not have a situation, and that's why I thought it was important that I clarified that it was not really at the substation, because there you have your infrastructure that basically detects and protects from lightning. We've got lightning arresters in most of all the substations that we're talking about, especially those that are providing essential services to the essential services like water. So we do have that. But as I mentioned, this happened along the line. So we've got about 18,000 kilometers of overhead and underground lines. And I'm sure you can agree that you won't be able to basically be able to police that all the time. But also, when we constructed this network at that time when it was done, the issue of environmental assessment to know when we've got problems of lightning occurrences was done,
right.
And it has shifted a little bit from where it was that time to where we are currently. And we are seeing a lot of it happening in the south near where the Rand Water Board is basically over.
Isaac, thank you very much. Isaac Mangena, City Power spokesperson, explaining that situation. And as he says, there is a degree of comfort at the moment in terms of water supply in Joburg.
702. Mandy Wiener.
Weekdays, 12 to 1 p.m.
Yesterday, we reported about a blockade on the N12 East and the N1 North interchange during morning traffic because residents of the Diepkloof Hostel were protesting about service delivery over issues of housing, electricity and water. Today, the Gauteng Human Settlements MEC, Lebogang Maile, is visiting the Diepkloof Hostel, and he joins us now. MEC, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for making time to speak to us today. Have you been to the hostel yet?
Afternoon, and thanks for having us. Yes, we have. We went there in the morning, and we met with the leadership of the hostel in Duna, and then we did a walkabout and agreed that we will have a formal meeting with them, which will include the municipality, because the hostel is owned by the municipality. There's about 65 hostels in the province. Only 6 of those are owned by the provincial government, and the rest are owned by municipalities. So we have to work with the municipalities in making sure that we attend to whatever problems that are there.
What were your impressions of what you saw during that walkabout, and is there merit in the complaints from the residents in Diepkloof?
The situation is terrible, and we have been aware because we have done work in all the hostels for starters to look at the capacity of bulk infrastructure, because the population in these hostels has increased significantly post 94. And the bulk infrastructure is not able to carry and sustain the population that is there. And we have done that work. And we need something like 20 billion to fix bulk infrastructure in all the hostels. After that, we did work to check what are the 3 priority agent issues in each hostel. And we came to a figure of about 3 billion, meaning that in the immediate, we have to have 3 billion to fix that. So we have to check with municipalities on what do they have, and then let's look at what we can contribute and talk to national and see what it means that if we can have 3 billion tomorrow, we'll be able to attend to at least 3 agent issues in each hostel in the province.
You mentioned at the start that you have agreed that you will go back to them. When we spoke to them yesterday, they said they will continue protesting until the 29th of May. Have you reached an agreement with the residents about what will happen until the 29th of May?
No. The residents have the right to protest, and we will not object to their protest. The only plea we have made that when they protest, they must not damage public property, they must not be violent. But otherwise, we can't stop them if they want to protest. And we are also not going to lie to them and say we'll do things that we'll not be able to do. If we don't get 3 billion, there's nothing we can do immediately. And that's why on Thursday, the municipality, hopefully the mayor will be part. The MMC and the officials, their budget starts in June. Our budget starts in April. We can be able to, within reasonable means, look at what can be done in the immediate. Because the housing issue in housing is big, it's complex. There's about 1.2 million people who need houses. If we were to build each and every one of them 3 houses, it means we must at least have one trillion plus. Our budget as a province is not even a trillion. It's about 150 billion, which caters for everything, education, health, roads, and all that. So we have to be realistic and be factual and be honest. That's why I said to them, let's sit down, so that we take you through what can be done and what can't be done,
right,
and agree on how we proceed.
MEC, thank you very much for your time. That is the MEC in Gauteng for Human Settlements, Lebogang Maile, having visited the Diepkloof Hostel this morning and explaining there what the issue is around housing. So to that point, a very, very interesting article in Africa Check about how South Africa's government continue to inflate housing figures and why it matters. Of course, bear in mind that we are in election year as well. And Africa Check saying that South Africa's housing minister, Mameluke Kubai, recently came under fire on social media for saying in an interview that when the constitution says people have a right to shelter, it's not because it says it must be done by the government. So what is the difference between housing and housing opportunities? Well, let's speak now to Keegan Leach, who's a researcher at Africa Check. Keegan, good afternoon to you. Thank you very much for your time. How is government inflating housing figures in South Africa?
Hi, Mandy. Well, this is a very old issue. This is something that we've debunked over and over and over again. And usually what's happening here is that someone from government is saying that they have built a certain number of houses, when what they mean is that government has provided a certain number of housing opportunities. Now, a housing opportunity can include a house, what's now called a breaking new ground house. It used to be RDP housing. But it could also include something like a service site, which is an empty stand that's just been connected to utilities, or a subsidy, or some other form of housing support from the government.
Okay, and of course, I imagine that this comes up again pre-election, because there is often a revisionist history. So what do we as the electorate need to look out for when we listen to politicians speaking about housing or housing opportunities?
Well, at the moment, the number of housing opportunities that's been provided is about 4.8 million. And if you hear that number, then just be careful about whether it is being correctly described as 4.8 housing opportunities or whether this refers to houses. Because if it does, then that's been inflated. According to the latest figures that the DHS gave us, only about 2 million houses have actually been provided.
And one beneficiary can receive multiple housing opportunities, right?
Absolutely. So that 4.8 million isn't 4.8 million people who have received some form of housing support. Some of them have received a service stand, and then a house was later built on top of that, which would count as, you know, one recipient, but two housing opportunities and one house. It gets quite complicated when we start to break it down into exactly what's been given out.
Keegan, thank you very much for explaining that. Keegan Leach, researcher at Africa Check. And you can go and have a look on Africa Check and go and have a read of that. And so important for us to be checking these things and to make sure that politicians are fact-checked, particularly when it comes to an election year.